Welcome to all those that are with us. We're continuing in the 12th story of Sipurei Maaseis, Rabbi Nachman's story. This story is entitled The Master of Prayer, and this is the second shiur in this story. So far we introduced this master of prayer, this prayer leader. We described what he was like, and the people that he gathered around him. And we spoke about a country of great wealth, and the people there made their main goal in life money and wealth. It was an obsession to the point where they actually worshipped it, and the status of a person, whether the person was classified as a human being or an animal or an angel or an Eloka, even a divine presence, was all based only on how much money they had. And we spoke in detail about this country and how some of the people from the Baal Tefillah's group went on their own to attempt to try to inspire the people of that country about religion, to make them realize that there's other things in life besides money, and they were unsuccessful. And the Baal Tefillah himself went and made an attempt also to reach the people, and did not succeed. We'll continue now from where we left off. Rabbeinu Zal tells us, Rabbi Nachman tells us, that there was a gibor. A gibor means a very powerful person, to whom had gathered a group of giborim, a group of very powerful people, and they went together to conquer lands. And all that the gibor requested from a country was subjugation, submission. If the people were willing to submit themselves and accept his authority, he would let them be. If not, if they refused to accept his authority, he would destroy them. And he went from country to country conquering. He didn't seek any money, only submission. And his policy was that before he would approach a country, he would send some of his powerful people while he was still far from the country, a few hundred miles from the country, and he would request that the people of the country agree to submit to him. And in this manner, he succeeded in conquering countries. Now, the businessmen of this land of wealth that we spoke about, who were doing business in other countries, they had left their home country and they were doing business elsewhere, returned to their home country, and they told the people there about this gibor, about this very powerful person. And when the people of the land heard about it, they were filled with tremendous fear. And even though they were willing to submit to the gibor, the fact that they heard that he despises money and he has no desire for money at all whatsoever, which was the opposite of their religious belief, therefore they felt it was impossible for them to submit to him. Because they thought that submitting to a person like this, who has no desire for money and despises money, in fact, would be like converting out of the faith. And therefore, they were tremendously afraid of him, and they started performing their sacrificial services, sacrificing offerings to their idols. They would take a person who was classified as an animal, meaning a person who didn't have much money, and they would make him, offer him as a sacrifice to those who they considered Elokas, you know, actual deities. And every so often, They would hear that the Gibor is approaching. He's getting closer. He's moving towards them. And then he went ahead and sent his messengers to them to ask them, what do you want? Are you prepared to accept to submit to me? Otherwise, I intend to destroy you. And the people in the country were very panicky, and yet they didn't know, they had no idea what to do. So some of their businessmen advised them that in our travels, we came upon a land where all the people in the land were deities, were like Elokaz, meaning that they had such tremendous wealth, massive wealth, compared to what we're used to, that based on our standards, they would all be classified as deities, to the point where they ride on angels. Their horses are angels, you know. Their horses are covered with gold and silver, you know, like people in our country who are classified as angels, to the point where the coverings of their horses would come up to the level of wealth of a person in our country who's classified as an angel. So they tie together two pairs of angels to a wagon, and they ride with them. So therefore, our advice is that we send a message to this land, which is so wealthy, and they will certainly help us, since this land, all of them are deities. This was the suggestion of these businessmen, and the people in the country felt this was a great idea. And they believed that certainly their salvation will come from that country, since the people there are so wealthy. The Baal Tefillah, the master of prayer, or the prayer leader, as we call him, thought about their situation, and he decided to make another attempt to go himself to this land of wealth and to see maybe he'll succeed in making them realize the truth and realizing their grave mistake in worshiping money the way they're doing it. So he traveled to that land, and he approached the guards that were outside the land, and he began talking to one of the guards. This guard revealed to him about this Gibor that's heading towards them, this powerful person that's coming towards them, and that the entire land is very worried about this. So the Baal Tefillah asked, and what do you intend to do about this? So the guard told him the fact that they're intending to send messengers to go to this other land where the people are much, much wealthier than they are, where all the people there are like deities, and with the hope that they'll be able to save them. So Baal Tefillah laughed at this when he heard this, and he said, this is all nonsense. This is ridiculous, because the people there also are people just like us. And you and those among you who you worship as deities, you're all human beings. None of you are a deity. There's one deity in the world. There's one Hashem who is the creator, and he is the only one who deserves to be worshipped, and who deserves to be prayed to. And that is the main goal in life, to serve this deity. This was the nature of his discussion with the guard, and the guard wouldn't listen to him, because again, he was steeped in this mistake for years. However, the Baal Tefillah continued. He really elaborated, spoke at great length to this guard, to the point where eventually the guard said to him, the bottom line is, what can I do? I'm only one person. And there's a whole country that thinks differently from you. The Baal Tefillah, upon hearing this, took this as a consolation, because he understood that his words were starting to penetrate this guard. Because when he had spoken to him the first time, that discussion, combined with the discussion of now, started affecting this guard to the point where he started doubting himself. And he started leaning a little bit towards what the Baal Tefillah was telling him. By the fact that he gave this response, well, so what? Even if I accept what you're saying, I'm only one person. Then the Baal Tefillah turned to a second guard that was there, and he spoke to him also, and at first the guard refused to listen, until eventually, after a lot of discussion, the second guard said again, I'm still one person. I'm only one person. There's a whole country here that believes differently. And so too, the Baal Tefillah went on to speaking to each one of the guards that was protecting this country, and until eventually he got them all to that point where all of them started doubting their beliefs, their original beliefs, and yet their only concern was that, so what, we can't change the world, we're only one person. At that point, the Baal Tefillah entered the land. And once again, he started speaking to people inside this land of wealth about the fact that they're making a tremendous mistake, and what they've set up, what they've established as their goal in life is not any goal whatsoever. Money is a means. It's not an ends. The goal is to study Torah, to pray, to serve Hashem. And the people refused. They didn't listen to him, because they were all very, very steeped in their beliefs. And they told him about this Gibor that's coming, that's approaching, and that they intend to send to the country of awesome wealth, where they're all deities there, for them to possibly save them from this Gibor. The Baal Tefillah laughed at them also, and he said, nonsense, ridiculous. They're all human beings, none of them are deities, and they're not going to be able to help you whatsoever, because you're human beings, your people, and their people, they're not deities at all. There's one deity, there's one Hashem who created the world, and he is the only one who is worthy of being served. And regarding the Gibor, the Baal Tefillah said to them in wonderment, could it be that he's the Gibor that... Could it be that he's that Gibor? And he didn't explain. He didn't explain what he meant. He was obviously referring to a Gibor that he knew. But they didn't understand at all what he was alluding to. And sure enough, he went to the next person and the next person, and he would speak to them. And by each one, when they would tell him about this Gibor that they're all petrified about, who's coming towards their country, he would always respond, is it possible that the Gibor that's coming to attack you is that Gibor? And until people started all murmuring and talking about this, about the fact that there's a person in their land that's speaking this blasphemy, he's making fun, he's mocking their faith, and he's saying that there's one Hashem, there's no such thing as deities, that as people, because they're very wealthy, deserving to be worshipped. And regarding the Gibor, every time he hears about the Gibor, he always responds, could it be that he's that Gibor? And they all understood that this must be the famous Baal Tefillah. This must be the famous master of prayer, because people had heard about him. And they issued a command to search for him and to capture him. Even though they knew that he always changes his format, how he presents himself, sometimes he appears as a businessman, sometimes he appears as a poor person, they knew about this, they were even aware of this, and they issued a command to investigate and try to capture him. And sure enough, they searched for him and they captured him, and they brought him to their leaders, they brought him to their ministers, and they began to speak to him, and he said to them the same thing he was telling the regular people. You're all mistaken. This is nonsense. What you're pursuing as your main goal in life is ridiculous. Money is only a means. It's not an ends. It's not anything to be worshipped. And there's only one Hashem in the world. And the people of that other land that you believe that they're all deities, they're all so rich that they all deserve to be worshipped, they're not going to be able to help you at all because they're all human beings. Now, to these people he was speaking to them he appeared as a person who was crazy, a nut, because all the people in that land all had the same belief that the most important thing in life was the pursuit of wealth, of money. And this person who's speaking blasphemy, he's going against their belief completely, he must be crazy. So then they asked him, what is this that we hear, that every time somebody asks you about the Gibor that's approaching, you always respond, could it be that it's that Gibor, like the one that you know? He said to them, let me explain. I was once by a certain king. And this king had a Gibor, he had a powerful person that was part of his group. And this Gibor got lost. And if the Gibor that's approaching your country now, that's threatening you, if it's that Gibor, then I know him very well. And more than that, the fact that you're trusting in that land of great, great wealth, that you think that they're all deities, that's nonsense. They're not going to be able to help you whatsoever. And if you rely on them, if you put your faith in them, that's going to be your real downfall. So they said to him, how do you know that? So he said, because this king who I just mentioned, whom I and a Gibor were part of his group, this king had a special hand. Meaning the picture, something that looked like a hand, a picture of a hand with five fingers and with all the different lines that people normally have on their palm, on their fingers. And everything, everything in the world from the beginning of creation, heaven and earth, and everything that was in the past and everything that will be in the future, all of it was engraved, was inscribed on that hand. On the lines, each and every single one of the worlds was defined on that hand. Just as on a map, in Yiddish the word is Landkart, just as on a map, the different lines on the map, we know that there are lines that represent cities, lines that represent rivers, bridges, buildings, all kinds of different lines and codes on a map, that by looking at this piece of paper describes everything that appears in a particular country. So too, this king had a yad, a hand, the image of a hand, which had these lines, and within these lines was defined everything in the world. Like letters, and just like on a map, you have writing on the map usually, whereby the names of certain rivers, the names of cities, etc., are written on the map, so too on this hand, the way the different lines connected was in such a way that also formed letters which defined certain things within the world. And all the people that were found in each land and everything that happened to them was all inscribed on this map. So this map wasn't just a map that defined places, it also defined people, and it also told everything that had happened regarding those people, past, present, and future. And this hand also had on it defined all the different paths and roads leading from one land to another, from one place to another. And because of that, that's what enabled me to be able to enter into your land. You recall, we mentioned earlier that these wealthy people had set up their land in such a way that nobody was able to get in. They had tremendous security. And we see that the Baal Tefila got in. So he said to them, the way that he knew exactly where the entrance to their land was and how to get in was through this yad, through this hand, this map that a king possessed. And he said, if you would want to send me to a different city, I know exactly how to travel to whatever city I want, all based on this yad, this hand. And in addition, this hand also had inscribed on it the paths as to how to travel from one world to the next world. Because we know that there are different paths which people can take to travel from earth to heaven. And it's impossible for a person to go up to heaven because they don't know the path. And on this hand was documented exactly how a person would go up to heaven and all the different paths that lead from one world to the next. Because we know that Eliyahu HaNavi went up to heaven via a certain path. And his path is defined on that map. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to heaven via a different path, and his map is defined there. And so too Chanoich, who lived in the beginning of the history of the world, and who eventually became an angel in heaven, the angel Matat, he also took a different path. And all of these paths, and all the connections from one world to the next, are all defined on that hand. And everything, the way it was in the past and the way it is in the present after things have changed dramatically in the world, for instance, after the flood and after other major changes in the world, the past and the present are all defined on this yad. For example, the city of Sodom, we know, which at one point was turned totally upside down. On this hand, one would be able to see Sodom, the before and after images, exactly how it appeared. And on this map, on this hand, I also saw this land that you're looking to for your help, for your hope, your salvation. This land, we say that they're all so wealthy that they're all worthy of being worshipped. And I was able to see that all the people of that land are going to be destroyed completely. When these people heard this, they were amazed by what he was saying, because they could tell that he was telling the truth, that this wasn't something that he made up. Because we know that on a map, all kinds of things are laid out and documented and defined. And they understood that his words, they were able to tell that he wasn't lying. His words were making sense to them, because they were able to see that it's possible to unite different lines on the hand and be able to see where they form letters. If a person can see it properly, clearly, to see how it forms letters. So they understood that this wasn't something the Baal Tefillah was making up, but rather this was really true. So they were very impressed by this. And they asked him, where is this king? Maybe he'll be able to reveal to us the path to making money. So the Baal Tefillah said to them, you still want money? Regarding money, let's not talk about it at all. So they said to him, okay, but still, where is this king now? So he said to them, I also have this problem now. I also don't know where the king is. And now he's about to tell them a story of what happened regarding this king, this special king. He said to them there was a king and a queen, and they had an only daughter. And this young girl became of age to get married, and the advisors, there were a team of advisors were gathered together to advise who would be appropriate for her to marry. I was also among the advisors, the Baal Tefillah said, because the king loved me, and my advice was that she should be given to the Gibor. She should be given to this powerful person who was with the king, because this Gibor had done many wonderful things, many good things for the country. Yeah. He conquered many lands. Therefore, I felt it's appropriate for him to receive the princess, for her to become his wife. My advice was received very well, and they all agreed to it. And there was a tremendous joy there over the fact that we found the proper groom for this princess. So sure enough, they were married, and the princess gave birth, had a baby, and this child, this baby boy, had extraordinary beauty that was not anything human whatsoever. His hair was of gold and had all the different colors, and his face shone like the sun. And his eyes were different colors, different lights. And this child was born as a complete high-level intelligent person, which they saw from the time he was born, how incredibly intelligent he was, whereby if people would be speaking about a topic in the presence of this child, wherever it was appropriate to laugh, the child would laugh. And wherever it was appropriate to get upset, or they would see that this child, who was possibly a few days old, a few months old, would show the appropriate facial expression that was appropriate for what was going on. It's just that he didn't have the ability to speak like an adult, but he had the intelligence, obviously. Now, the king had a melitz. A melitz is a person who has a fantastic ability to speak very eloquently, very well, and has the ability to present fantastic poetry were things to the king that the king would enjoy hearing, enjoy listening to very, very much. Now this Melitz, he himself had tremendous talent in this area, and yet the king took him and showed him the source of wisdom, the source from which he could gain an incredible amount of knowledge in his field, in this Koya Hamalitza, in this ability to defend people and to be able to speak, to always know what to say, the most appropriate thing to say that would be pleasing in whatever circumstance he was in, whatever situation he was in. So therefore, his own knowledge combined with what the king showed him, he was a wondrous, wondrous Melitz. This king also had a chacham, an intellectual, a very, very smart person. And this chacham was very bright on his own. However, the king showed him a path, a way, where he could go up to the source of chachma and be able to draw from there. And sure enough, by doing that, combined with his own chachma, and the chachma that he drew from this source, he became an incredible chacham. The same was the case with the Gibor. This Gibor, who was very powerful, and yet the king showed him a way to go up to the source where he could draw power from and become much, much more powerful. Because, and now Rabbi Nizal explains, there is a sword which hangs, which is suspended in the air, and this sword has three different powers, three different abilities. When this sword is picked up, all the officers and leaders, generals, who are leading an army that would want to attack a person, they all run away. They all flee from fear. So automatically, their side loses the war. Because if the leaders flee, if the generals and then who are the soldiers, who's going to lead the battle? So obviously, that side loses. However, it would still be possible if the lower level soldiers would want to persist, they could. So therefore, the sword has two edges to it. which means two powers. One of the blades, one side, one of the sharp sides of this sword, causes everyone that it's aimed at to fall. The second side of this sword, the other edge of this sword, places a sickness upon the people that it's aimed at, whereby they become thin. They lose all their energy, they lose their flesh, to the point where they shrivel up. And by moving this sword in that place in the air where it's suspended, by moving it in the appropriate way, it can be used effectively against an enemy army in the manner we just spoke about. So the king showed this gibur the path to this sword, and that's where this gibur was able to draw his incredible power. And regarding me also, the Baal Tefillah said, regarding my, what I do, the king showed me my source from where I was able to draw what I need. In addition, the king had an Oyhev Neamon, a very trustworthy, beloved friend, who had the deepest, most awesome, wondrous love for the king, to the point where it was impossible for them not to see each other, even for the shortest period of time. And yet we know it's impossible for two people to be together permanently. So therefore, they had pictures of each other, and they would relish these pictures. They would enjoy them immensely whenever they were forced to separate. And in these pictures, one could see how the king and this beloved, trustworthy friends of his loved each other and hugged each other and kissed each other with the utmost of deep love. And anyone who would look at these images would find themselves filled with tremendous deep love. Once again, the king showed this Oyhev Neamon, this beloved friend of his, where the source of love is, whereby he was able to go to there and be able to draw a higher level of love than what he had even up until then. Sorry, we mentioned that the king showed this beloved, trustworthy friend of his where he could get the source from which love emanates, where by going up to that source, he could even increase the love that he had much more so. The appropriate time came when each and every one of these people went to their source to be able to draw their power, the Melitz, the Gibor, and all the king's men. They went to their source to renew their energy, you know, in what they were involved in. And one day, a tremendous storm struck the world. And this storm upset the entire world. It turned the entire world upside down. It made places that where water, major bodies of water were, suddenly became dry land, and places where previously there had been dry land suddenly became oceans and rivers. And places that were uninhabited became cities, and places that used to be cities became wildernesses. This storm literally turned the entire world upside down. And this storm wind entered into the house of the king, and it didn't do any damage there other than for one thing. It grabbed the child, the princess's baby, this precious baby. And when this happened, the princess ran after the baby, and the queen also, when she saw this, went running after the child, and the king also, to the point where everybody became dispersed, and now nobody knows where they are. And all of us, all the king's men, were not present at the time, because all of us had gone up to that place where we renew our energies. And when we returned, we found that all of them had gone. And the hand, that special map that the king had, was also gone. And from that point in time, all of us became dispersed. All the king's men became dispersed. And from that point in time, we no longer have the ability to be able to go up to our source from which we renew our energy. Because once things got turned upside down the way they did, obviously, the original paths that we used to take, those paths are no longer functional. Everything got changed around. Now we'd have to have new paths to be able to know how to travel, how to go to different places, how to go to different worlds. And therefore, we no longer have the ability to rise up to our source from which each and every one of us draws his energy. However, even though we can't renew our power, even the power that remained with each one of us is still quite special. And if the Gibor that you're all afraid of, that's coming towards you, headed towards this land, is that Gibor, is the king's Gibor, then he certainly is very, very powerful. This is what the Baal Tefillah said to the people of that land of wealth. They listened to him and they were amazed. And they held on to the Baal Tefillah. They wouldn't allow him to leave. Because again, obviously they thought, who knows, maybe this Gibor that's heading towards their country, maybe it's the Gibor that this Baal Tefillah knows. I'd like to stop here at this point for now. One or two small points. When we complete the story, we're going to elaborate and clarify as much as we can, as much as is available in the commentaries explaining the story. But just different points that I've heard from rabbis who lectured on this story. We're told about this storm wind that entered into the king's palace, and it didn't really do any damage. It just grabbed the child. I once heard from one of the leaders of Breslov, who lived in communist Russia for many years, and he spoke about when this storm called communism stormed the country and caused everything to be topsy-turvy. And when their ideology came into the homes of people, all they really wanted was the youth. That was their main interest. They were interested just in having the youth given over into their hands. They opened these camps, these komsomols, and these groups, because they knew that if they capture the youth, they have everything. They have the entire country in their hands. And sure enough, that's what they did. And from being told this, we need to realize that those of us that have children, or those of us that intend to have children, we need to know the incredible importance that of all the different possessions that a person has in life, out of all the different things that a person considers important in their life, among the most important things by far is the children. And we need to know that the storm, the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, that's his main goal. That's what he's after more than anything, because he knows that the salvation of the Jewish people and the salvation of parents is their children in most cases. If parents are blessed with children who go on the right path, who do the right thing, there's no greater wealth, there's no greater joy and happiness and fulfillment in life than that. And this is why this storm seeks to attack the child specifically. We spoke about the king's men, and we're going to see eventually that there are 10 of them, that the king and the Baal Tefillah, altogether there are 10 people. We know that when we speak about prayer, in order for prayer to really be effective, the most effective prayer is when it's with a minyan, when 10 people get together to pray. And when we discuss the commentary on this story, we're going to see that that's the symbolism that's being used here, that there are forces of evil and there's good, and there's always a balance between them in order for there to be free choice. And we're going to see eventually how the king's men are going to be able to restore the proper order to the world. And the one that's going to play the most effective role out of all of them is the Baal Tefillah, as we're going to see. Because we know the Arizal and all these Sforim tell us that even though there are many things that are important in Yiddishkeit, in religion, Torah is important, mitzvahs are important, the most effective item in bringing the world to a tikkun is tefillah. The Arizal speaks about this in the Pri Etz Chaim and explains this, and Rabbeinu Zal and Rav Nosson Zal, his students, in their writings, expound and elaborate on this tremendously. I hope, with Hashem's help, we're going to complete this story, and we'll clarify as much as we can, and there'll be a wealth of advice and information and insights about life and religion that can be gleaned from this story.